the podcast with everything paranormal. It's the 222 Paranormal Podcast, starring your host Joe Shortridge and his sister from the same mister. It's Jen.
Hello.
What's happening, my brother?
Oh, nothing.
So you have your Ghost Biker Exploration t-shirt on today?
Yes, I'm wearing a shirt from Miranda.
Nice, nice. Yeah. If you guys don't know, check out the Ghost Biker.
I didn't do laundry, so all my other shirts are no.
That's what I don't get. Like, I'm single, you're single, but I have mounds of laundry all the time. It's paranormal.
Yeah.
I don't know how, because all I wear is work shirts, right? Yeah. So, but anyways, anything spooky happening in your world?
Really nothing. I was going to put the REM pod out while we recorded, but I totally forgot.
Yeah. So last time we were recording here in the studio, aka Joe's house, something very strange happened. My nephew was here and he was talking about his experiences with gnomes. And he was sitting across from me on the mic, and we, Joe had stepped out of the room for a minute, and we both felt this ice cold, like just presence. And we both looked over, and Joe's sliding closet door was moved out, like from the bottom, like it moved out. It wasn't like swaying. It like moved out and it went back in.
Okay.
And both Caleb and I looked at each other like, what in the world just happened? It was the strangest
thing. I hear
thing.
Noises in there all the time, and It's probably a gopher.
Yeah, they're in there for the summer or the winter. But no, that was very strange, because the strangest things always happen when we're podcasting. Most of our paranormal activity happens when we're on the air. But anyways.
But
what?
Talking about strange.
Yes.
We have one of our favorite people in the world.
My favorite. I am the number one Wardo fan.
We have Steve Ward on the phone with us.
Welcome to the show, Steve Ward.
Great to be here, but I suspect you say that to all your guests. Even
No. You're the number one.
Okay.
Welcome back.
Official Steve Ward fan club members.
Yes.
We are Wardos.
I'm the president and Joe's in charge of all the mail. He's vice president. But anyways, how are you, Steve Ward? What is new?
I am beyond wonderful.
Good.
What is new? Well, I'm dodging chores around the house, mountains of things to do, but I'm in the process of writing a book.
Yay.
With has no title yet, but it will deal with the sort of the patterns and underlying connections in different aspects of the paranormal, things that we've talked about on your show before. And I expect people to, you know, to be able to see it by 2030. I think it's on schedule.
Oh.
Also, I was featured in, you're familiar with Small Town Monsters, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Seth Breedlove does these phenomenal documentaries. Well, the sequel to The Mothman of Point Pleasant has been out for a little while now, called The Mothman Legacy. And I have been privileged to be one of the talking heads in there. You'll see me pontificating occasionally throughout the production.
We love that. So, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you, you know, throughout 2020, were you able to go anywhere or out to Point Pleasant? Were you traveling at all last year?
Yeah, yes. I went to Point Pleasant 3 times.
Wow.
A bunch of us went on the typical Mothman Festival weekend, which is the third weekend every September. And, did the stuff we usually do. There weren't throngs of people or anything like that. But we visited the Mothman Museum and went out to the dreaded, infamous TNT area and, just had a really good time. And I also visited some people in Van Meter. There was no Van Meter Visitor Festival this year, west of Des Moines, Iowa. But I went out there anyway to visit some people and visited some friends in Davenport. These people connected with the paranormal, people like you guys that I can talk about all kinds of strange stuff. And I even took a journey out to Maine. I went to with a stop in the Pittsburgh area to see Brian and Terry Seach.
Oh, nice.
Who are, the regulars at the Butler.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that are the curators of the S files, the Siege files, which is a little disarray right now because they're in the process of, they're in a temporary place right now before they actually move.
Okay.
And so, and then I visited a man known as Commander Cobra, who I'm with on the on Mac Maloney's Military X Files is a podcast that I'm a correspondent on. And he had some people out to his place in Maine, which is really hard to find in the dark. By the time I got there, it was pitch dark, so he had to stand out on this road with a flashlight. And it's a perfect place to hold up for the zombie apocalypse, I
Oh,
think, if you
nice.
had to. And then on the way back, I stopped in upstate New York. Bruce Harrington, who runs the Creature Weekend, was visiting his mom up that way, and so I stayed there for a while. So I got was able to do a few things, you know, in the midst of all this craziness, which was it was I was driving me nuts. So it was kind of nice to get out and do a few things.
You know, nothing soothes the mind more than a long road trip
Yeah,
by yourself. You
definitely.
know, just get in the car
Yep.
and drive. Definitely. Now, are they still having any strange activity in the TNT area?
Are there what now?
Is there any strange activity still going on in the
Well,
TNT area?
yes, people now see I'm the kind of person that doesn't really pick up on much of anything. I mean, I did have one strange experience leaving the TNT area a few years ago. But people are out there all the time getting EVPs, you know, the concrete bunkers, the igloos that are all overgrown there. Of course, that was where they stored munitions during World War II. Some of them have been sold to private interests, and some are just there, sort of having, you know, all this great foliage and everything growing all over them. People will see shadow people out there. They'll get strange voices. So there is activity. People have seen strange lights out there occasionally, but it doesn't seem if you go back and read the Mothman Prophecies by John Keel, it doesn't seem to be anywhere near that level of activity. I mean, not only were people seeing this winged cryptid they call the Mothman, they were seeing strange lights going overhead all the time. There were reports of these shadowy figures we know as the Men in Black. There were animal mutilations. There were outbreaks of poltergeist phenomena. So while there still seems to be unexplained things going on, it's nowhere near the level that it was in the mid-60s.
You know, and that's strange that you've mentioned that they see shadow figures because, you know, you think about the TNT area and you think of Mothman, but it is really all the paranormal. But I almost think that there's a lot of UFO activity out there. And sometimes I wonder if the shadow people are alien or not. You know, they could be aliens too. And we just call them shadow people thinking that they're part of the ghosty side of the paranormal.
Well, that
But
was one of Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who, of course, we lost over a year ago. She actually, when she was investigating shadow people, she was collecting reports of people that would, you know, experience these things in their bedrooms and their homes or elsewhere. She discovered that a significant percentage of those people were also experiencing classic alien abduction phenomena.
Oh, okay.
wow.
So she now she came to believe that it may be the jinn, you know, from the Islamic tradition, and but she you know her thinking wasn't static. She went through several different stages. Now it's interesting because as you know, I am a student of John Keel, and my friend Zelia Edgar and I joke that we are parishioners in the Church of John Keel, you know. And I remember, just as a little aside, when I went to the 1976 MUFON Symposium in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which was 10 years after the infamous swamp gas incident that where Dr. J. Allen Hynek suggested that some of the UFOs at the time, and there was a whole wave of UFO sightings in South Central Michigan at that time, that some of them might be swamp gas. And of course, the news media decided that they were all swamp gas, and that was the solved the mystery of the UFOs. Well, here it was 10 years later, and he was speaking there. It was the name of his talk was Swamp Gas Plus 10 and Counting, and he had become one of the good guys by then. He had started the Center for UFO Studies in Evanston, Illinois, and had separated from Project Blue Book, which was kind of, kept him on a string. I mean, he had to sort of balance, he had to kind of debunk some of the sightings or be skeptical, when in fact he was beginning to think that there was really something to this. So it was really, really great to see him there at that particular incident. And I was going somewhere with this as well, which was going to be very enlightening, but I think I just lost that thread. I'm sure I'll pick it up in a moment.
That happens all the time, especially to me. But, you know, this just kind of all ties into the topic, you know, that we want to talk about today, is this particular alien abduction story of Betty and Barney Hill, which happened in 1961, I believe.
Yes. Right. But you know what? Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
I just got my thread back.
Okay.
If I don't say it now, I'll lose it forever.
No, it's fine.
So when I went to this, I was immersed in John Keel, and Keel's ideas were unconventional. If you read Operation Trojan Horse, he began to see that many of these things are connected and are not separate categories. And I was not, it was like, you ever have a friend that gets involved with some kind of religion and they want to handle the pamphlets to you and then tell you the way you should be thinking about this? Well, that was kind of what I was doing. And it was like having an insurance salesman at your house at 10 p.m. and you've got to go to work the next day. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, so, Steve, but that which reminds me, I want to talk to you about something after the show. I have a religious insurance agency I'd like to talk to you about. Oh.
It's not Amway, right?
Join our club.
No. All you have to do is sell all this stuff to your friends.
Yeah.
So here's the last stage of where I was going with that. Mm-hmm. John Keel discovered that certain individuals seem to have experienced a lot of different things. And I talked to a lady from New Hampshire, and coincidentally, we'll be talking about another lady and another man from New Hampshire from some years ago. And when I started, she had a missing time experience. And when I first talked to her, she had not made a breakthrough to find out what was revealed under regressive hypnosis. But by asking the right questions, I found out that she had seen shadow people. They were experiencing classic haunting phenomena in their home. Both her sons were seeing orb phenomena inside and outside the house. And then I asked her a question. I said, this is going to sound like a strange question, but sometimes people also have experienced some kind of an unknown animal or cryptid. And at first she said, well, no. And then she said, oh, wait a minute. My mother and sister-in-law saw a strange animal near the property. And what they had seen was something that looked like a panther, but standing on two legs.
Oh.
So this one lady who had a classic abduction experience had, and there's much, much more to it, but had all these other things going on. And if I hadn't been influenced by John Keel and people like Jacques Vallée and so forth, I never would have known the questions to answer. To ask, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
But now, Jennifer, you just mentioned this classic case of Benny and Barney Hill. And that was their experience took place on September 19th, 1961, in the White Mountains of New Hampshire. Beautiful area. Have you guys ever been up there?
No.
I've never been to
New Hampshire. We haven't been to the East Coast at all or up that way. It's been far as New York.
Oh, well, there you go.
The state of New York.
Yeah.
That little town where Shanley Hotel is at.
Yeah.
Napanac.
Wow.
But, it's interesting that you mentioned that people have the crossover stuff, because you hear all the time about Bigfoot and people seeing blue orbs around Bigfoot or seeing UFOs around Bigfoot. So, it's so interesting that everything correlates to around the same things.
But some researchers are keep things very separate.
Mm-hmm.
They assume that the high strangeness aspects are people's imagination. And I've talked to people like that have done a lot more research than I have over the years. Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Stan Gordon, for example, a researcher from Pennsylvania. They have both been in situations where they've talked to witnesses that had been interviewed by other people. And some of the other people were either Bigfoot people or UFO people. And the UFO people didn't want to hear about the Bigfoot that they saw about the same time.
Yeah.
And the Bigfoot people did not want to hear about the strange lights in the sky. In fact, I mentioned Brian Seach from Pittsburgh area. he and his group went out to some area in Pennsylvania one night, which is known as a Bigfoot area, where people had sightings and had heard what they thought was a Bigfoot. And they ran into a classic UFO overhead, a strange meandering light that didn't move conventionally at all, and then it vanished for a while, then it came back. So not a bad trade-off. They did not get to see a Bigfoot, but they got to see an unusual, an unidentified light that they could not explain.
That's cool. That's cool. Now,
Yeah.
with this particular case, because you said that Mothman was around, what was that, 1964, did you
Well,
say?
it started the first major sighting. There was a couple before, was November 15th, 1966, and this was in the TNT area. The two couples, the Scarberries and the Mallets, were just driving along in their two married couples driving along in their 57 Chevy, I think it was. I'm not sure, 58 maybe. And they saw this sort of man-like figure with bat-like wings, and the pronounced feature were these bright red glowing eyes. And it was near the fence in the TNT area, and they once they realized what they were looking at, it was pitch dark. They took off, and you guys have been out there in the night, right, to
Not
the
at
TNT?
night. No.
No,
No.
you guys haven't. Oh my God,
No.
no.
We've been to Point Pleasant. We went to the Mothman Museum. We're there, but we were there during the daytime.
Yeah,
So,
yeah,
yeah,
we
well,
have.
we're only going if you're going
We're
cuz
waiting for our personal tour guide to take us out
Yes.
there.
No,
So don't
probably.
worry.
I've gone out there a couple times alone just to see, just to kind of give the chicks a thrill that
But my point is that this case with Betty and Barney Hill is happening the same time, in the same eras that, 60 to
yeah, just a few
65.
years earlier.
Yeah.
It was very. It was back at a time when there was still a lot of course, skepticism, and the newspaper people would make their little joke at the end of the newscast about the UFO sighting.
Right.
But they were, of course, they were went under a therapy, but with Dr. Benjamin Simon. Dr. Benjamin Simon was someone that helped people that had traumatic experiences during the war. And he would
Oh,
take
okay.
them under, regressive hypnosis and try and find the root cause of their anxiety, if they couldn't sleep, or whatever it was. And so he was kind of one of the early pioneers helping war, what they would call, I guess, shell shocked. I guess maybe that's what they called it back
Yeah, they
then.
did.
But people that dealt with these terrible events during wartime. And they well, maybe we should recap Betty and Barney Hill just a
Sure.
little bit, so that
Yeah,
okay,
for
we
our
won't get in too much
listeners.
detail, but because a lot of people probably already know. But they were coming back from a vacation from Canada, I think from Montreal. So they're coming south into New Hampshire, and they're driving along, and Betty notices this light in the sky that she thinks is a falling star, but she finds out it's not falling. It's kind of floating and meandering and very erratic in its movements. And then they think, well, it must be some kind of a plane. And Barney's kind of angry because he thinks it might be a Piper Cub, and the pilot's being, just reckless, and he shouldn't be doing that. It's night, he's flying low. And of course, it gets closer, and they actually did see, it looked like there's this row of windows with two red lights on each side. And Barney actually saw what looked like figures inside. Now, they sort of heard a series of beeps in the beginning of this experience, and they later on they heard another series of beeps, and they didn't realize it at the time, but they lost a couple hours, and they had moved a lot further along their journey, because when they got home, the time didn't make any sense. The sun came up earlier than it should have, so they were very disturbed. They knew something happened. Even when they came home, even though they couldn't remember everything, they were staring out the window, and they were looking at each other, and they were saying, this was an amazing experience, but they didn't really know what happened. They just had some vague memories. Now, just to give people some sources here, if you want to find out more detail, there's a great book by Kathleen Marden. Kathleen Marden was Betty Hill's niece. And she teamed up with Stanton Friedman, who was a well-known UFO researcher, and they wrote a book called Captured. And it covers the entire Betty and Barney Hill incident. Now, there's also a couple more obscure places to go. Dr. Berthold Schwartz wrote a book called UFO Dynamics, and in there, it's been republished. I don't know if it's gone to third-party sellers again. I hate it when that happens because some of the best research books become, unaffordable. But in there, there's a wealth of material. But he republishes the inner three-part interview he did with Betty Hill. This is after Barney Hill died in 69, I think it was. There was a three-part interview in the Flying Saucer Review, which is was a great British publication from 1955, and it was in the 70s. I can get the dates, I think, but the point is with the Flying Saucer Review, you can get those on Kindle about I think $2.99 each. And it's just, if you can get some of those, it's just a wealth of great material. One of the it was a three-part deal, and let's see, volume 23, number 2, 1977. So if you look at the volume 23, 1977, there's three consecutive Flying Saucer reviews that have that interview with Betty Hill, which is really fascinating. But you can get a great deal of that from the Captured book. So anyway, they had they were very disturbed by this. They knew they'd seen something. It was suggested that they report it to the local Air Force base, which they did. And then Betty had read a they started getting books like you do when you first get into this out of the library. And they got a hold of one of Donald Kehoe's books. Donald Major E. Kehoe was the head of NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. And he had written several books advocating that UFOs were real, and he was a retired, Marine officer. And so she wrote him and eventually got a response, and they investigated. But after a few days, maybe 10 days after she made that contact, she started having these dreams and nightmares. And they were reflecting back to what happened to them, if it was a real experience, and some people don't think it was, but they started having these dreams. And it was a man named Robert Holman, who was one of the members of NICAP, that was the one that suggested they seek out some kind of a qualified therapist. And that led them to Dr. Benjamin Simon. And that's when they had several sessions of hypnotic sessions where this incredible experience started to come out.
Yeah, and you can. I looked up online trying to find the recordings of that about their
Are they?
hypnotic
Oh,
session. And
yeah.
I found some, but they were kind of broken up to where people were talking in between, so I didn't save them. But if our listeners want to get out online and find them, it starts out where they're kind of afraid, but man, she just is terrified of what happened.
Oh, yes. I think one place they might try, and there's a wealth of good information, in a place called the Faded Discs Archive. If you go to that and you click on a woman's name, Wendy Connors, and go underneath that, there's UFO history, there's high strangeness stuff, there's the Pascagoula incident,
Oh, yeah.
those recordings are there. Just a wealth of stuff. I think you might be able to find them there. Now, I first heard them, Linda Moulton Howe was able to get them released some years ago and played them on Coast to Coast AM.
Okay.
And what was fascinating was, I don't know, have you guys ever seen the TV, made for TV movie they made on that experience?
No.
It was called The UFO Experience, and I wish they would put the DVD back out. I think it used to be on a bootleg,
Oh.
but it was, I remember, I mean, I was there watching it when it was on, back in the days before VCRs, and when you had to sit through commercials.
Oh,
And a bunch
God.
of us, we were there, our informal UFO group, we were all there with our cassette recorders and our patch cords and everything. And man, we weren't going to miss this. It was great because James Earl Jones played Barney Hill.
Oh,
And
really?
if you remember, that they were an interracial couple,
Yeah.
which is a big yawn these days, but back in the early 60s, it was controversial, And Estelle Parsons played Betty. And it was just really well done. They did a pretty good job with the special effects and the aliens for the time period. But I remember our sort of de facto leader named Lloyd. He said, as we're watching this, he said, "Do you see what they're doing here?" And we said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, and we had gone into it for a ways. He said, and when they did this, they didn't. It wasn't really sensationalized. You got into Betty and Barney Hill's life, what was going on at the time. It wasn't just like a shocker, alien, cheesy alien movie or whatever. And he said, "You see, they're showing you how normal these people are. An extraordinary events experienced by normal people, which is what all of us deal with all the time."
And they,
And go ahead.
oh, I was going to say, and the thing about back when this actually happened, everybody, I shouldn't say everybody, but people were saying that they were doing this for attention, but they didn't want attention. That was the whole
No,
thing.
they were trying to keep it quiet, and it kind of leaked out. And eventually it went into there used to be a couple of major magazines called Life and Look, very prestigious magazines. Well, story was published in Look magazine at the time, and it was taken seriously. Again, some people thought that perhaps it wasn't a real physical experience, and other people it was convinced it was an abduction. But this is the first really alien abduction that people started talking about.
Yeah, and
And
it's
go
interesting
ahead.
too, is when you're describing what happened, is they were just basically driving down the road. He saw a light, like you said, he thought it was a plane, and it's not like they remembered stopping or nothing. All it was like if they just blinked their eyes, and next thing you know, they're 35 miles down the road, and they get home and they realize that they lost 3 hours of time. And then after that is when they started realizing everything.
Well, they knew, Barney was kind of in denial for part of the time. In fact, during the experience, we'll get more into what happened later on. But when they got home, before they didn't really know everything that happened, there were some strange spots on the trunk. Betty, for some reason, took a compass out there and it spun. Her dress was torn and she couldn't explain why. They reported it to Major Paul Henderson on the 21st of 61, and they were treated well by the Air Force. They weren't diminished or made fun of or anything like that. And later on, you find out that there was actually a sighting by the Air Force, the Air Controller Service, I guess it's called, Form 96 or whatever. It just actually was a hard copy, where they tracked something about the same time, some kind of an object that lasted about 18 minutes when the Hills saw this thing. And of course their conclusion was it was probably a balloon, which is,
Oh,
par
wow.
for the course.
Oh, yeah.
But so there were investigations. A NICAP came in, and then when they took Holman suggested and went to Dr. Benjamin Simon, piece by piece the I incident came out, and they were stopped on the road, like a roadblock. And back, when you mentioned Joe about how the you could hear the terror in their voice. Well, when I heard those recordings on Coast to Coast AM, I thought, and I remember reading that when James Earl Jones and Estelle Parsons prepared for the part, they were able to hear the original recordings, and you can hear them. I mean, they mimicked some of those perfectly. They got the New England, she got, the New England accent for Betty perfectly, and you could hear the terror. She, expressed the terror that Betty felt in her voice, and James Earl Jones too. He was ready to shoot that thing down. He didn't know what that thing was, and he was going to get. He had a gun in the trunk, and he was determined. He was going to take this thing down. Of course, he didn't. And they went through sort of what we see now as kind of a classic abduction experience. They were laid out on tables. They were poked and probed and so forth. But then there's a whole sequence afterwards where Betty has this long conversation with the one that she called the leader. Now, the way these aliens looked, they had kind of big wraparound eyes, kind of slanted. They definitely were not human, but they weren't, in my humble estimation, they weren't exactly grays. if you look at the illustrations and then you look at the way people portray the gray entities, it's almost like a gray would be a caricature of what these were. You know what I mean? If you were to make a facsimile of a human, you know, it might look kind of plain or silly or not quite really have all the features of a human being. And that's kind of what it seems to me that, and others have pointed this out, that back in the old days, there were, you know, a lot of these close encounters of the third kind, where people were seeing these entities, had been chronicled by another group called APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. Actually, NICAP stayed away from that. They were kind of, they thought they were too controversial. They would talk about strange objects in the sky all day, but boy, they didn't really want to talk about aliens so much. But when you look at those cases, there was quite a variety of beings, you know, some giants, some small, but you couldn't find much in the way of grays back then. The grays, to me, didn't really seem to show up in mass until we had, you know, 1977, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and the early 80s, Whitley Strieber, Communion. Now, maybe that's my perception, but the people will say, well, perhaps the grays came in and pushed the other entities out, the other groups, or perhaps it has something more to do with perception or manifestation. I don't know. But so I would, they were about, I guess, what, 5 feet tall, 4.5 feet, 5 feet tall. They had a bit larger heads, but not quite like the grays. And they definitely were not human. And but Buddy Betty had sort of a rapport with this entity. And that's where she saw the infamous star map, which she, you know, reproduced under hypnosis. That's where she had long conversations with him about, you know, where do you come from on the map? And he said, well, what do you know about the universe? And do you know where you are on the map? And she said, no. And then he said, well, what good will it do for me to tell you where I am? So, you know, nothing worse than a sarcastic alien, right?
Right. Did she make any drawings of what she saw, her or Barney make
Yes,
any?
as I recall, in fact, they it's a good question, because when they got home, they separated and they both drew a illustration of the object that they saw before they could put everything together, and it came out very similar. Yes, they ended up drawing. You can see the crude drawings. It was Fuller. What was his name? Roger Fuller or Robert Fuller? I'm not sure. Who wrote The Interrupted Journey? That was the first book that dealt with the Betty and Barney Hill incident that had been put out. And so, but
John
they,
Fuller.
but what's that?
John Fuller.
John Fuller, thank you. And Barney was unconscious part of the time, but that seems to happen in sometimes these abductions where there's two people. One is more alert, and so Betty was giving them hell. I mean, she wasn't going to take any crap off these guys. But then, like I say, she had these long conversations with the leader, and she told him she wanted to. And I'm going to digress here for a minute, because if you've looked at the work of Jacques Vallée and other, and Joshua Kuchin, for example, there's a lot of parallels between modern day UFO experiences and elements of folklore. Well, there's one incident I want to point out in the Betty and Barney Hill incident that kind of is makes me think of folkloric tradition. And she wants something, some kind of proof she can take back with her, because who's, you know, nobody's going to believe her anyway, but at least if she had something physical or tangible, she could believe it. She would know that she wasn't crazy or dreamed it. So she sees this book, and it's kind of looks like it has a kind of a plastic cover, and it's got strange writing and photographs in it. And the leader says, yes, you can have that. And she's thrilled. And then, as they're about to leave, about to cross the threshold, now I digress for a minute. If you go back in folkloric traditions, you know, you hear the stories about the people that have been taken away or gone away with the fairies or the elementals. And sometimes they'll try and sneak something out of fairyland, maybe something valuable or whatever. There's one story from Ireland about a young boy who went off with the fairies. He thought he was gone for just a few hours. Here's the time distortion again. But he was gone all day. But he was playing with some kind of a, they were throwing a ball back and forth. It was looked like it was made of gold. So he decided he wanted to take one of these back with them. But as he's about to leave, nope, they take it back. You can't take anything out of fairyland. So as Betty is about to leave, Betty and Barney Hill are about to leave the craft. At the last minute, the leader comes to her and says, "The others object. I'm sorry, you can't have the book."
Oh.
And she is distraught. And you can hear that. That's represented by Estelle Parsons on in the movie. And you know, it's just, it seems like it's almost like an updated, a dusted off tradition of Fairyland, where you just can't get things out of Fairyland. So anyway, this eventually all this comes out. But one of the things we talk about when we talk about the show, what people don't realize is some of the stranger stuff happened after they got back. I mean, it's almost like the abduction is ho-hum, but all the really weird stuff that happened to Betty and Barney Hill afterwards is just off the chart.
Well, let's go into that a little bit. So, you know, I was reading before the show, you know, about some of the things that they'd endured, you know, when they were abducted, the experiments that they were doing on them.
With a needle.
Yeah, the needle, and
So it's
I didn't
skin
mention the needle, but
scraping,
go
and
yeah, so it said that, you know, one of the aliens, this is Betty's experience, poked her in the belly with the needle and she was in tremendous pain and he waved his hand in front of her face and all her pain went away.
right. They told her it was a pregnancy test at the
Huh.
time.
Interesting.
So they were fascinated by Barney Hill's false teeth for some reason. It was they did some kind of a thing where they pushed a camera or something right up to her skin, like where they were sort of taking a picture. So it was a and some of it gets a little more personal in what they did, which I won't go into, but it was what we think of now as a fairly classic abduction experience. Of course, there was no HMO, no deductible, and no copay. So
But I heard that they actually did okay with her. They took fluids, obviously, but with him, they actually took some skin scrapings.
Yes,
And
I think so.
yeah, 'cause, and that kind of makes you wonder, okay, we hear about alien abductions and people getting different tests on them, but you know, if you think about it, that's what we do to like frogs and that. We do the same
Oh,
thing.
yeah.
Right.
It's all science, right?
Yeah.
So when they returned home and the stranger things started to happen, like my question is okay, so it's 1961, so they would have had, you know, a video camera, a regular camera. Did they take any self portraits or self, I want to say selfies, but you know, pictures of the areas on their body?
You know what? That's I
I
don't
don't
know. I don't
know.
know that for sure. I know that he was Barney had some warts for him on his body, and I mean he went these were checked out by the doctors and so forth. So I mean there was some. I mean of course the doctors didn't assume it had to do with some kind of extraterrestrial contact or whatever, but they didn't really have any explanation for some of the physical ailments that they had gone through.
Yeah,
And
'cause
but the most traumatic thing was for them not knowing what happened, and you know until this came out under several sessions with Dr. Benjamin Simon, they were in a really bad way. They weren't sleeping, and there was a great deal of stress.
And didn't he have bleeding ulcers and stuff like that?
Yes, yes.
So there was a lot of physical things that happened.
Well, he was you know in he felt a great deal of stress because, you know, he'd be driving back through New Hampshire and his wife was white. And, you know, he knew that, you know, that sometimes people didn't weren't overt in their racism, but he knew there was that undercurrent. I mean, you know, if you're in that situation, you know what people are thinking. Well, you know, from their expression or their demeanor, what's going on. So he had a great deal of stress like that. And there was also a time when they first got married, he had to wait for a transfer with the post office from Philadelphia to get closer to Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And so he finally got a job in Boston. He had two sons from a previous marriage, and you know, driving back and forth and dealing with family issues, he was under a great deal of stress anyway, even without this bizarre experience.
So what other kind of weird things happened after that they didn't?
Well, a lot of it was sort of like poltergeist experiences. Oh. One was one of her clocks, a clock that was made specially for her by her mother, went back 3.5 hours or 3 hours and 15 minutes for some reason.
Just like the missing time.
Yeah. That's kind of what the implication is. Now, when Barney passed in 69, one of the clocks stopped at 7:20, which is the time he died.
Oh.
She didn't touch it for a month, so then all of a sudden it starts working again and started at the same precise moment that 7:20 came along on whatever day it was. They would come home before Barney passed. They would come home, and her coats, Betty's coats, would be out of the closet and thrown in the middle of the floor. They would hear footsteps in their house for a while. Now, I met Betty's niece, Kathleen Marden, at the last Exeter festival in New Hampshire. Exeter was an event that happened about 14 miles from where Betty lived in the middle 60s. Well, let's see. Yeah, it was actually after their contact. It was a series of close encounters that Fuller also wrote about called the Incident at Exeter. Incident at Exeter. And they were having all that going on. But Kathleen Marden, her niece, so I got more insight. It was great to talk to her because she actually recognize, as we go through this, you're going to see how bizarre some of this stuff. I mean, some of the stuff that happened to Betty and Barney Hill afterwards were certainly human intervention. The government was doing some messing around, you know, kind of spying on them. But also some of it is just more like paranormal or psychic phenomena. And Stanton Friedman used to be very, very hardcore ET. And would kind of turn away from the high strangeness aspects. Well, Kathleen told me that he actually, because of her testimony and the things she experienced, see, the family experienced a lot of weird stuff. He started to open up to the possibilities that there was a little bit more to it than just a straight extraterrestrial visitation. So when her niece and nephew were over there for a while, they were experiencing all kinds of stuff. They'd hear like people walking through the house again, classic haunting phenomena. Mm-hmm. And now there were one time she found a man in the house, and Betty did, and she said, "What are you doing here?" He said, "Well, I'm selling magazines." And she said, "Where's your magazines?" He just laughed and he took off. Yeah,
that's creepy.
And another time there was somebody else in the house, but they didn't know it. They looked, they heard something, so they're looking all over, and all of a sudden they hear somebody running, and they run out of the house. It turns out he had been hiding in the closet. Now, jeez. They had people, neighbors would report that they had people, strangers were peeking into their windows all the time. One time they got a call and they were looking for somebody, John or something like that, Johnny. And is Johnny there? Well, no. This is base intelligence. Where's Johnny? And so a couple of times they were obviously tapping their phone, mm-hmm. but they totally screwed up.
Oh,
and
they knew goodness. The government
was listening to them.
Wow.
Another time somebody was trying to, some of their friends were trying to get a hold of them, and somebody picked up purporting to be their house, and they said, "Well, the Hills aren't home right now, and here's where they are." And it was all BS.
Oh my goodness.
Now you heard of Men in Black, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Betty and Barney dealt with Men in Green.
Yeah.
They would have guys in coveralls come to the door. "We got to read your meter." And one time, about a half hour later, another guy came by, "We got to read your meter." And they figured, well, they must have screwed it up the first time or whatever. So they would have several of these visits during the week. And then she got the bill, and it said that it was estimated. So why is her bill estimated when she's got an army of guys in green coveralls coming to her door?
Sure.
So she called up and said, Well, they're not our people. Our guys wear blue coveralls.
Wow.
So, you know,
I
if they're
mean,
doing a sting operation, they could have at least got the right coveralls,
yeah.
you know,
Right.
to cover up their okay, then it gets really weird. One day, Betty comes back home. Now, she lost a pair of earrings when she was had the abduction experience. She came home and on a kitchen counter, there's like some dirt and leaves laying there, and her earrings are sitting right there that she lost
Oh
on the
my goodness.
craft. You know, it's
So,
when this happened, they under the regression, they remember that she actually freaked out, got out of the car and tried to run through the woods,
yes.
and she was met by two men, and Barney actually got out of the car and, like you said, was gonna go for his gun,
Right.
and he was met by two men, and he said that they were wearing dark, either black or gray uniforms. Now,
Right.
I wonder if they were actually green uniforms,
Well, who knows? And
you
you
know.
wonder if they were you know, under some kind of influence where if they these people that stopped them looked more like men than they should have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very hard to say. But let's see. There was they had there was a woman. Now she's just identified as Lori, and we don't know how, but somehow she got the original Air Force text of their interview, and she sent it to Betty Hill. It took a month to get there. It shouldn't. It was just, you know, it should have taken a day or two. And then this woman got a phone call, purporting to be some guy from the Air Force, saying that you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life for this, and so forth. And she's freaked out. Her husband gets home, and he's furious. He calls up. And he says, this so-and-so called my wife and threatened her. And they said, well, we don't have anybody here by that name. Okay, let's get
Shadow
weirder.
entities.
Now, again, some of this is sort of mixed, which seems I mean, some of this is very physical. You know, they have this experience, and you know, it's tracked on radar by the Air Force. They have physical effects on their car. Her dress is torn. Barney has some kind of physical effects, physical ailments as a result. But then some of it, like the earrings, how the hell did the earrings get there?
Yeah.
And you know, couldn't they have wiped them off a bit, maybe put them in a gift box instead of with dirt and leaves?
Thank you for visiting our craft.
So Barney Jr. from a previous marriage, he's stationed in Panama, and he's on guard duty one night. And some gentleman shows up. He's all dressed in white. He identifies himself as Mr. Geist.
Oh.
Ghost in German, right?
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Geist, the only thing he wants to talk about with, this is like 2 in the morning, you know, standing guard duty. The only thing he wants to talk about with Barney Jr. is his father and his stepmom and their strange experience aboard this UFO. Now, he shows up, I guess, on several successive nights. And eventually the brass finds out and they're freaking out. Like what? So they're questioning Barney, and Barney doesn't know where this guy came from or what he's doing. So they wonder what the hell is this all about? And you know, what's who, and he has this guy has a foreign accent. You know, Barney's very familiar with a Spanish accent being stationed in Panama, and there's no it's not Spanish, whatever it is. Let's see. Oh, okay. Now we're getting higher levels of strangeness here.
Bring it on.
Now this apparently this happened to Kathleen Martin was part of this, and I did not. You don't know that by reading the book. And it was when she was about what was she about 10 years old, I think,
I
when
think she
this
said 10 or
incident first happened,
15.
and heard the strange thing that happened to her aunt and uncle. And they just loved Barney, by the way. I mean, he was such a caring and nurturing uncle. You know, they just he just fit in the family really well. But one night, now this was a gathering of the family, and the family was having experiences. They would they, Betty and Barney Hill. They kept seeing these UFOs. I mean, sometimes very not just lights in the sky, but they could see some kind of a craft with places they went. Well, this one night. They got some kind have some kind of family gathering, and they can see kind of through the window. There's a car's pull up in the driveway. It looks like somebody's gotten out. They can't really see his features, but it looks like he's lit up a cigarette, and they think, here we go again. You know, another reporter, maybe a self-styled UFO investigator with his laminated card, and they want to pester them about the Betty and Barney Hill case. And then nothing happens. There's no knock on the door. So eight of them go outside, and there's no car in the driveway. Now they look across the street, and they see this giant ball of light, which is kind of receding across the street, and eventually disappears behind a garage across the road. So, Joe, I want you to explain that to me.
That is the men in black morphing themselves into two men wearing suits, driving a black Cadillac that appears to be a Cadillac, but is actually their
They're on
spaceship.
A mission from God.
Okay, we can cut that, right?
I'm not cutting anything out for this interview.
Okay.
Oh.
All right.
No, but when you were saying that, though, that's what actually popped in my mind was we hear of these cases where people are seeing a man in black, and they're always driving newer either Cadillacs
right.
or full-size Chryslers. And when you were saying that, they mentioned or saw that, it reminded me of Dan Aykroyd's actual encounter also. If you remember that, he saw a car that just vanished. He turned around and it was gone.
Right. Keel had that experience during the Mothman Prophecies stuff. Some of the men in black types seem like they're just, I mean, they could be mistaken. It could be a missionary or maybe an encyclopedia salesman or something
yeah.
like that. But sometimes they just seem to be very mysterious and don't seem to be all that physical. But so who knows, you know.
And they don't know how to interact with people.
Right. But it's strange because there were several witnesses that while they couldn't see whoever this was or whatever this was through the window, it looked like it was just some guy. And I mean, they heard the car pull up in the driveway. So, you know, how do you process that?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Now here comes the strangest part.
There's more? There's more?
Oh yes. Now this, of course there's if you go to these sources, you'll find out a lot more stuff. I guess there were mystery helicopters flying around, and there's just a great deal of material on this. But again, Robert Holman, the gentleman that suggested that Betty and Barney Hill initially undergo regressive hypnosis. Now, this is would be after Barney had died. He suggested, he said, Betty, look, you had this rapport with this, the leader, the one you call the leader. And you and Barney had, you know, you kept seeing some of these objects occasionally. Why don't you try to make some kind of telepathic contact and see if you can't set up another meeting? And so the idea was that she would go out on her back porch at 9 o'clock p.m. every night and, you know, send her thoughts out to the UFO people. And now I'm pretty sure that she didn't think and they didn't really think anything was going to come out of this. But she, nevertheless, she went through it. Now, the problem was the UFO people could not land where they were because it was too congested. But her mother and father, the Barretts, lived about, 20 miles away, maybe 19 miles away. They lived in, I think it was Kingston, if I'm not mistaken, but they had like several acres of property. No problem for the Space Brothers to land there.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what the direction was through the telepathic contact. Well, several weeks go by. She gets a call from her father, Mr. Barrett. And he says, Betty, you got to get over here. So she comes over and he has a story to tell her. His sister-in-law, who has the same name and lives very close by, Barrett, and I believe this must have been Kathleen's mother, if I'm not mistaken. One night, late at night, she hears, now she's in a little house. It's off the road a bit. I mean, people that would have broken down or whatever, normally nobody would be coming to her house for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
She hears a knock on the door. And then there's a pause. And then knock, knock, like a steady knock, And she thinks, what the hell is this? Now, she's 73, but she's got all her faculties. She's not imagining things, and it's freaking her out. And then she notices there's kind of a light or something outside the window, and she thinks maybe a storm is brewing. And she looks outside the window, and she's a classic UFO hovering over her backyard.
Oh,
Oh
wow.
my goodness.
She does not answer the door.
I wouldn't either.
And eventually the knocking stopped. Now she knew, had no idea about this bizarre experiment that they were going to do.
Did people in the family question and doubt their stories?
Well, if from what I don't, some of them may have, but there were several that experienced some of the weird stuff. They would also see lights and orbs and so forth, not just that one night. So several of them knew something strange was afoot, you know. So whether or not they believed the full initial experience is another question. But some of them experienced strange happenings, which it was suggested that it was because of Barney and Betty Hill's initial experience. There was some kind of connection there. But I don't know of any, you know, outright skepticism from the family.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder if they, before the abduction, I wonder if they were being watched or that by the aliens, or if they've actually had abductions before that that they don't even remember.
Well, that's possible because, as we know, people that experience this stuff, you know, there's even a Bigfoot connection to this, but we'll get to that later. We'll save that for later.
All right.
As we know, people are repeaters. They have different types of experiences, so there may be a lot of times with people there probably are other experiences that they don't know of, but sometimes they do come out. Sometimes they do think back and think, oh yeah, that time that, you know, this one particular thing happened, but it gets stranger. So Betty goes back to the drawing board. Now, they know something happened here. I mean, they didn't expect, I mean, I don't think she expected anything to come out of this. But here her aunt had a very bizarre experience. So she goes back and sends out the message again. Now, if it was me, I would be tempted to say, hey guys, you can get all the way from Zeta Reticuli, but you can't find the right damn house.
Exactly.
So she says, you know, you've got to go to this particular address, the Barretts, and you know, I don't know. I'd love to know exactly what her message was, you know, like guys, you kind of, you know, you're a little bit off, just a few feet, you know, you'll get there. So
Turn left at the barn and
yes. Well, which barn, right? There's a lot of barns. So she does it again. Several weeks go by. And then one night, her mother is laying in bed. And she hears a knock on the door. Now, she's agreed to this. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, I guess you agree to. And then later on, when it happens, you think, what the blank was I thinking of?
Exactly.
So she hears the knock. This is 2 in the morning. She hears the knock and a pause. And then this is the downstairs at the front door. And then a series of knocks, steady knocks. And she can't even move. She's just freaking out. Finally, she gets the courage to wake up her husband. The moment he wakes up, they hear a tremendous, it sounds like an explosion, and the house vibrates. So they're forgetting all about aliens coming to visit. And the first thing he did is run downstairs in the basement to see if the furnace blew up or anything. And everything's intact. Nothing is harmed. Everything's just fine. But they did not answer the door. Now, I ask, assuming these were all out of Betty's journals. She was kept journals from the beginning when she started having these dreams and didn't know exactly what was going on. What if they had gone to the door and opened it? What would they have seen? I wonder if it would have been something more like a poltergeist rapping on the door rather than a would a physical flesh and blood, Betty and Barney Hill alien be standing there. You know, you got to think how crazy this was, because the plan was they're there. So Oh, nice that you showed up. We'll call Betty and Barney now. They'll be over in a moment. Give me
Yeah.
time to put some coffee on and
Or I'm thinking of the aliens are going, we drove this far, we knocked, and you didn't even answer the door.
I know, how rude. But like go back to the thing where we said, like did this happen before or could there have been abductions prior to that? You think about scientific experiments. You could have some that are short term or long term. Who's to
Sure.
say that they didn't do these tests and then want to come back and monitor the outcome or the results of whatever experiments that they had, afflicted on them, I guess is the word I
Yeah,
want
and
to use.
right.
When scientists do scientific experiments, they don't just do it once. They have to keep up or repeat it so that they see if they get the same answers.
Yeah. So I would just, have been curious if they put some kind of chip or marker or beacon or something in humans that they have abducted to be able to come back and find them again.
Well, there's a lot of who was the guy that was the guy that did all the surgery and took out
Oh, the guy
these?
that took them all out.
Oh, I can't remember his
Yeah,
name, but I
I
know
can't
who
remember
you're
his
talking
name.
about. Yeah.
He passed on some time ago, but they some of the stuff was really bizarre. There was one they took out of somebody that was sending off two different FM signals, different frequencies for a period of time. And there's these sometimes they're like these little metal blobs. Whitley Strieber, they've got a video of him where he's got one in his ear or his earlobe or whatever, and they tried to take it out and it started to move and started to move back deeper in. And I go,
Oh
okay,
my
oh
gosh.
yeah, that was he's talked about that, and that is just creepy as hell. So so it's really weird. You have this very strange split, like you do so much of the paranormal. Like you said, a lot of the stuff is very physical. For those that think this is all psychic projections or whatever, it doesn't seem to ring true with Benny and Barney Hill. But on the other hand, how do you explain this bizarre attempt at contact? What about the earring showing up the way they did? What about the strange visitor that wasn't there in the driveway and the orb? They're just this split, and then you've got Mr. Geist, and you've got the Air Force screwing up, monitoring their phone. Kiel had a lot of stuff like that too, where they were messing with him. The I think the IRS and the I think he got the on the wrong side of the FBI one time when he wrote a critical article on J. Edgar Hoover. And so, if you've read the Mothman Prophecies, he has a lot of weird stuff go on. Some of it is, I think, very human and very much involved with the government messing with him. So,
And
but
how
you get into this stuff, and how do you separate
Yeah.
what's
And how do we know that the people that were bumbling the investigations weren't the men in black? Because I've heard of so many cases where they don't know how to act. Like they'll come into a house and they'll say, "Yes, we want food," or "We like food." And they'll sit down and be very stiff and rigid and not and be so awkward in the way that they act is almost comical.
And again, we're dealing with reports, and we don't know that every report is legit. I mean, people make up stories, so sometimes we get garbage in, garbage out. There is a certain consistency to some of these things that suggests that there's something to them.
Another thing too that makes this case really bizarre is the star map. She was
Yes.
shown the star map and then she actually redrew it. And back then, Zeta Reticuli, I can't say that.
Yes, that's right.
They didn't know that it was a binary system.
Right, there were
And
stars.
she drew it as a binary system.
Now there are some that suggest that it was, that she just happened to find that it was just a coincidence that this wasn't really, didn't really reflect a part of the cosmos. Maybe not. The one part, the binary system on the map. if it's real, is exaggerated, where it's kind of blown up, which would make sense if if there was a commerce, so to speak, between the two planets. They might, so they one of the things that he mentioned, I think, that some of the lines showed trade routes or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, when she drew it, she drew lines from each one, and they said that, or the alien actually explained to her that those are the trade routes.
You know, what's interesting about the star map, too, is in 1968, Marjorie Fish, who was of Oak Harbor, Ohio, which is right outside of Toledo, where we live, she read Fuller's Interrupted Journey and was an amateur astronomer and a school teacher, I think she was. And she wondered if it might be deciphered to determine which star system that came from. And based on, her model, she was showing that, the distances and the points of the star, that it made sense that it was really out there.
Yeah.
So I don't, it may very well be. I have, for a long time, I thought that perhaps a lot of these things were not what they seemed to be, that there was, some other element to them, that there's so many other cases where they're not as clear cut. Now, look, it's very possible that I've always said for a very long time that there's more than one answer to some of these things. I think that we may very well be dealing with sort of the others amongst us, as Albert Rosales would call them. Now, Albert Rosales has got this great database of sort of humanoid or entity reports from 01 AD all the way up to 2015 in about 15 different books, just an incredible database. But some of the encounters are they're more like something out of fairy lore. Some of them are very ethereal, very, I hate to use the term interdimensional, because you have to really define that. If something's interdimensional, you mean it's physical and can somehow move elsewhere, or is it something that is sort of phases in and out, it's molecules, I don't know, separate and manifest and dematerialize or whatever.
Sorry, we were hearing weird stuff here.
There's something paranormal going on in my house right now.
Like a weird,
your
like
house than mine.
Yeah, exactly.
It sounded like a little kid going woohoo, woo.
I thought some disembodied spirit was happy that I was on the show.
Probably.
Well, they are.
They always are, right? Now, this is just like a total rabbit hole going down, but have you ever had or witnessed any UFO activity yourself personally, or do you want to talk about that? You don't have to answer if you don't want to.
Well, I'm trying to think. I've seen a couple strange lights in the sky, but nothing terribly spectacular. So I mentioned that I had one experience, and I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on the show before, but I went into the TNT area alone one night, and just to see if I had the intestinal fortitude to do it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it was in the spring, and it was loud because the frogs and the bugs and everything, it was deafening. And I went down one of the igloo roads, and I went into one of the igloos, and I took footage and so forth. Anyway, I drove back, and on the way back, I experienced a couple flashes of light. And it was like a strobe and then a strobe, and I couldn't figure out where it came from. But I was so stupid, I didn't think about, well, where in the road am I, so I can come back tomorrow and figure this out. And something may have happened. When I got back to the motel, I looked at the clock, and I was sure that I didn't have any missing time, but I didn't write anything down. So I don't know. I don't know if anything happened there or not. But here's what did happen. When I opened the door, this is on the other side of the river, by the way, from Point Pleasant, over in Gallipolis.
Oh, okay.
I opened the door, the TV set turned on by itself, and started flipping through stations consistently.
Oh,
and
man.
And I thought, wait a minute, this does not happen to me. Not me. Nothing ever happens to me.
Oh, never say never, Steve.
So I unplugged the TV set and it stopped. And I went to bed. I thought, wow. And oh, and then you know what? There's a follow-up to that. A year later, same month, I'm in there with a John and Tim Frick, and we're crammed in a room together, and we're talking one night. And these were old style TVs, and the TV set came on by itself, and we thought, well, maybe it's just a stray signal or whatever. So the next day, Tim and I came in to do something on the way, whatever we were doing, and the TV set turned on and flipped through a couple stations. So we tried with a remote to see if we could get anything going, and nothing happened. A few years later, the next room over, now this is all in the same corner of this motel, some friends of ours, two couples, are in this one bigger room, and they had a different TV. They had a more modern TV, and that TV was, but it had trouble with the sound. It kept going down, so they keep turning it up and up, then all of a sudden it would start blasting, and they have to turn it down again. And then at one point, a can of pop or soda or whatever fell off the table without anybody bumping it. So
That
I don't know
sounds
what's
like
going on in that
poltergeist
corner.
activity right there.
Maybe I brought something back to the my theory is I brought something back from the TNT area, and fortunately he's still flipping channels and didn't come home with me.
Do you remember what show it stopped on?
I don't even know. I don't know what
Okay.
it
I was
didn't.
just
Okay,
curious.
yeah, it wouldn't.
Star
When
Trek.
the first experience, it was just, it was if somebody was had pressed the button and it just kept going. I thought, man, that's
Welcome to our world.
yeah. Well, fortunately, sometimes you think that, gee, I wish I'd have an experience. And I thought, okay, I've had my experience. I'm good.
Yeah. But you get addicted to it. It's like riding a roller coaster. First time you do it, it's so scary, and then you want to do it again and again. You're chasing the rush.
Or
You know,
the rush is chasing you.
could
back
be.
in that time period, people, all kinds of people were seeing. In fact, there's a road, Camp Conley Road, which is kind of on the sort of on the southern border of the TNT area. The Lilly family, they were experiencing all kinds of bizarre stuff, strange lights going overhead all the time, and they had visitors, like sort of like Men in Black types, but showing up like bedroom invaders or apparitions standing next to the bed. Yes.
That's
That's it's such. Oh, and then there was a lady over in Gallipolis that lived on a farm that was experiencing classic poltergeist phenomena, haunting phenomena, and even claimed to see a couple men mutilating her cows. You know, you heard about,
Yeah.
and they were dressed in coveralls. And when she went to chase them, she said they jumped over the fence with ease. Now, I don't know what to make of that, but her son said he would see these big, like boxcar like craft or whatever come low over their property. Now, she also had an experience with a couple strange gentlemen, she claimed, that came out of some kind of a UFO. Well, this gentleman was very similar to what Woodrow Derenberger had reported some months before. Derenberger is the one that supposedly contacted the famous Indrid Cold, if you remember, of Mothman Prophecies fame, the entity that they portrayed some of that in the movie. Another strange series of events where it's just hard to determine, what is real. I mean, did this guy really have an experience? Now later on, Woodrow Derenberger seemed to have embellished some of his experiences, but some think the initial experience was real. But there were these two other people. There was this woman in Gallipolis, and then another man that re was anonymous and reported this to John Keel, that had a very similar experience. Now their contacts didn't give a name, didn't call themselves Indrid, but these you talk about the rabbit hole. That's the thing you're constantly going down, is trying to determine what's real and what's not.
Yeah. And, Ingrid Cold, I've heard so many stories of him either being an alien or an entity. He could be either or.
Well,
Nobody knows.
the right. But some of the I probably shouldn't even brought him up because it's
Here
so
we go.
mythical.
Here we go.
Well, he there were people. He supposedly he came to his door, Woodrow Derenberger's door. Somebody apparently was. He was driving a black VW. You know, like they changed from Cadillacs to VWs, I guess. But
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
better mileage. I
I've
mean, if you're
always
going,
always had VWs.
if you're driving from Zeta Reticuli, I mean, you got to save gas.
It's good gas mileage.
Well, that's true. You know, the star drive doesn't really fit in a vehicle, so you got to go economical.
Right. Now, with the Betty and Barney Hill, is anybody following up on like that house or the area? I just wonder if, say, if somebody, if it's still in the family or if somebody
I
else
don't know. You
bought
know,
it and
the person to ask that would be Kathleen Marden, and she, I wouldn't be surprised if she, hadn't. Now, you know, some of the haunting phenomena. I mean, it's an old New England home, so,
Yeah,
you know,
that could have been
it
there
may not be
before.
directly connected. Although it's when people that saw the Mothman. Now, the Mothman was a paradox because it was about 6, 7 feet tall. It had a wingspan of about 10 feet. Normally, you're not going to be able to get something of that mass off the ground with a 10-foot wingspan. It would not always flap its wings. It would take off straight like a helicopter sometime when it put its wings behind it. Didn't make any sense. But over 100 people saw this thing in that year, thereabouts. You got the biological factor that doesn't fit. I had another. Lady and gentlemen, I had another brilliant point, which just evaporated, and it'll come back in just a minute.
Not a problem.
That's what we deal with that every time, and that's why I'm constantly writing notes down in front of me so I can remember.
I know.
Yeah. Well, I already had that problem, right? But then you pile COVID on top of it, and then you get COVID brain, and I like totally have these brain farts. Like, I worked with somebody for like 15 years, and I couldn't remember their name. I'm looking right at them, I'm like, I don't even know your name. I'm like, ugh.
I think that's
Oh, help me,
more
Jesus.
stress and
Yeah, right.
old age.
I've not been abducted by aliens that I know of, that I
What I was go
remember.
what I was going for is the aspect where people see these things and they report essentially the same thing, but when you analyze it just like how can this be? How can this be a physical entity?
Oh, sorry, I just had a thought.
Yes.
What was the conclusion of the therapist who put them under therapy?
Oh,
Did he
another good
believe
question.
them, or did he?
Well, as I recall, he consulted with a friend of his from the Air Force, and his friend indicated that there were unidentified flying objects that reliable people were seeing. But his Dr. Benjamin Simon suspected that it was the other experience was created by the trauma of seeing this object, and that perhaps they didn't really experience, a physical thing. Now, I believe Barney told him, after, I mean, they got to listen to the tapes finally after several sessions of going under the therapy. And Barney told him that, he respected him greatly, but he was absolutely sure that that this happened to them. He said he didn't like them. It's portrayed very well by James Earl Jones in the film. I don't like them touching me.
Oh, so I don't know. I just this whole case is so interesting. I had no idea about all the extra stuff afterwards that you mentioned.
Well, I didn't either, and it was a kind of it fits the paradigm that some of the groundwork that John Keel laid out. Let me tell you about the Bigfoot connection,
Okay.
or the possible Bigfoot connection. It just had to do with some property that Betty's mother had, and a couple family members were out there one night, and they saw strange lights moving around in the sky. I think more like orb-like phenomena. They also heard, this is another thing that shows up. They heard like a car door slam. John Keel talks about this
Okay.
in some of his in like poltergeist cases and so forth. And I also remembered my great thought that I lost too. I'll get to that in a minute if I remember. But on this property, the next day they went there and they found these large footprints that possibly were like Bigfoot-like footprints, kind of like the same footprints that Stan Gordon was finding in Pennsylvania in 73, 74. The point that I lost earlier, which kind of connects to all this, is that people that were seeing the Mothman, there was a Swedish researcher that went in after John Keel, and he interviewed even more people than Keel did about their experience. Virtually all of them had an outbreak of poltergeist phenomena after they saw the Mothman.
That is so strange.
Yes.
Wow.
It
So
all
what the hell
wraps
is the
up.
Mothman?
Yeah, it all wraps up. I mean, we've said it before. When we talk about the paranormal, it's just not ghosts. It all wraps together and
Yeah, you have to open your mind and expand to other possibilities. You
Well,
can't just
that's
box it into one category.
and let's follow up on that, because we do know that there's a lot of people that look at UFOs as nuts and bolts. Some say no, it's something else. They're thought forms, they're tulpas or whatever. There are those that think that Bigfoot and other cryptids are definitely flesh and blood. Others say no, somehow they're more elusive, they're more ethereal, you know. But the important thing I think is, and you know, all of us have started out somewhere, and you think whatever it is, ghosts, cryptids, UFOs, you start out thinking it's something. But we have to be careful that we don't imprint too much of our beliefs on that. And we must listen to what people tell us, what their experiences are. Because if we ignore some aspects of what they're telling us, we may not actually find the truth. So
Yeah.
it's very important to listen. When I started out with this, I was a strictly an ET guy, you know? And but when I read Keel's Trojan horse, that really, really changed my thinking. And I didn't go in happily, you know. Sometimes when you're presented with new ideas, that, you know, I was very happy with aliens coming from elsewhere and collecting soil samples and you know, taking us for a nice tour aboard their craft every once in a while.
Yeah. And it's same thing with me. I mean, I started out as UFOs, then went to ghosty stuff, and now I'm looking at Indian burial mounds and all. It turns out to be a giant rabbit hole that your life goes into because of all this. But you
Well, you
know,
remember. That is our life. That is
and
our life.
speaking about this, before we let you go though, we want to mention your show.
Yes, and you have been on the show.
Uh-huh.
It's
We
the High Strangeness Factor on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. On I guess you can get it. Well, you can find it that way. It's on Spreaker, I guess it's called. You
Yeah.
can download it from there. And I guess we're on several other platforms. But me being a Luddite, I probably can't list them. So you can find it eventually. But if you go back several months, you'll find a really fun interview that the three of us did together,
Yeah.
and that was a good time.
It was. Definitely. But, we really, really appreciate you coming on because we thought this is a really fascinating story that everybody, it's kind of gone away, but you don't want to forget it because it's so pivotal in our quest for, understanding what else is out there.
Yeah.
Well, occasionally you'll see Kathleen Martin is interviewed now and then, and you'll once things kind of get up back up to normal, you'll be able to see her speak occasionally.
Oh
And
yeah.
very just a great lady, and she really is keeping the legacy alive of Betty and Barney Hill.
Yeah, which is great. But you know what? We can't wait. Hopefully 2021 will reconnect us with all our homies and
Well, I
our
hope so too.
Stevie, because it sucks not being able to see you at 50 conventions a year, right?
I know.
It
I know.
sucks.
Right now,
I
the
remember the first time we crossed paths was at the Michigan Paracon some years ago. And back then I was nobody.
you were somebody to somebody.
And now I'm marginally somebody.
So
Well,
no
And I
marginal
actually,
about it.
I you said something about a 15-minute interview, and I think I was so fascinating and witty that it went on to 20 or 25 minutes.
Well, I remember at the Butler show, we interviewed you, and we had a complete audience in front of us.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, but for sure, we'll definitely, hopefully, God willing, this year, we'll be able to get back together
Well,
and
so far,
hang
Michigan
out.
Paracon's still on.
Is it? Oh, okay, good.
So,
Good. We have
and so far,
one
Butler
day.
is still on too. I don't know if you guys are going to try
What
to make
is
it to Butler
Butler?
or not. Butler in
Okay.
Pennsylvania,
Oh,
right.
we'll be there. We love Butler. It's one of our
Okay.
favorite conventions to go to,
Yeah.
for sure.
But anyhow, Steve, thank you for coming back on
We
with us.
appreciate you.
We
Well,
miss
thank
you. We
you
haven't
so much for
seen you in
having
so
me.
long.
Yes, and let us know when that book comes out
Yes,
in
this book.
2035.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure
My
that I'll hit my
retirement year.
20, 29 or 30. It should be out.
Oh, okay.
We'll
All
be like,
right.
welcome to the
It's the
Paranormal
700,000th episode.
Podcast.
Maybe I should do it as a graphic novel,
There we
there,
go.
yeah,
with me as the hero.
There you
That's
go. Why
it.
not?
I could
Why
have
not?
a torn shirt and rippling biceps, you know, who would know?
No, you'd have 50 torn shirts
Yeah,
all on at the
every
same
scene
time.
would have a different
For
shirt
sure.
on.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, Steve, you take care, and everybody check out Steve on Facebook and check out his podcast.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm Mac Maloney's Military X-Files
That's
every
right.
week on the Distant Thunder Radio Network on the same. You can get it on Spreaker and so forth, and that's also a lot of fun. Different kind of a show, but and I'm around now and then on various shows.
All right,
All
great.
right.
Well, take care. We will talk
All
to you
right.
soon.
All right, guys. Have a
All
good night.
right. Thanks, Steve,
Thanks,
and thanks
Steve. All right.
everyone for listening this week. We'll leave you with some shattered faces from Dead in Five in honor of Benny and Barney Hill. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.